This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to Sunday Groove. This is episode 16, unless I lost count along the way. This one, I actually bring in, I guess I should tell you what the show is in case this is your first one. It probably isn't, but if it is, we're just going to talk about different styles of music. We have a topic of the week and or of the month, and I have a rotating group of guests that I have from time to time. So basically, usually a different guest each episode. But we're going to talk about comfort albums this time. But this one's really cool because I bring in one of my longest-lasting friendships. Actually, my first college friend is going to be on this episode, and that is Sam Neely. How are you doing today, Sam?
I'm good. So are we going to talk about how we met in the bathroom stall?
You know, I thought about that and didn't even mention it to you on the intro, but do you want to talk about that?
Oh, let's talk about it.
So, at college, at our college in particular, there was a thing called Impact that we all went to make our schedule.
College orientation.
Yeah. And we made our schedules and did some fun stuff and met people. Well, as you know, people have to do to stay alive. There's a thing called pooping. I'm sure you're familiar with it. I get in there and I'm pooping and don't want to be disturbed, and some dude comes to the door and knocks on the door. So me being me, I just ignore them because I'm awkward like that. So what's going on in your head in that scene, Sam?
So I was in the cafeteria eating with my parents because the parents come with you to orientation.
Yes.
And I went to poop, and on the way back in, I realized I can't get back into the cafeteria because I don't have my name tag. So I had left it in the stall hanging around the toilet paper dispenser. So I had to go back, and of course, that stall is occupied. So I knock on the door, and I'm like, hey, I left my name badge in there. You want to toss it to me? And then there's just no answer. And then I'm like, hello? Oh, yeah.
How many times did you knock, or how long were you there? Do you even remember?
No, it was longer than is comfortable, but shorter than I got worried.
Well, I don't think any amount of that would be comfortable, having to go knock on a random stall door and be like, hey, can you give me my name tag?
Yeah, I didn't know if it was going to be a situation where it would be better just to, like, wait for you to get out of that stall, because then what if people come in and they're like, why are you standing there? There's another open stall. It was a new experience for me.
Yeah.
I was in a new place where I was going to have to live for the next 4 years. For all I knew, the guy in the stall was going to end up being my best friend.
Yeah, it's really crazy because, like, I was just having, like, flashbacks from bullying in high school and just used to people making fun of you for taking a dump in school. And so that was my flashback. Now I've been thinking back to the fact that, you know, we're in college, so a lot of that's behind us. And so I eventually respond to him, realize that he's probably not there to do anything bad. And so I respond to him and, I guess, toss it to him or hand it to him through the crack. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how I got it. I just remember that I did get it from you.
Right.
And I don't remember how I knew it was you, either.
Yeah, I don't remember that part, either.
I know I did not peer into the crack. That's not something that I was doing Yes.
Yeah, later Sam's like, oh, I recognize you from the crack of that stall.
That's right.
I noticed that ginger hair. And so I just waited until I saw a ginger on campus that was Mel. And I'm like, let's talk to him. He's got to be the poop guy.
That's right.
But yeah, anyway.
Well, then I think later that night was the scavenger, the video scavenger hunt where I did the Britney Spears impression.
Right.
And by had to, I mean I volunteered to.
Right. And I remember I was the guy that I was going to do it if no one else volunteered, but I was like hoping and praying somebody would do it. And thankfully that was Sam. Because, like.
Let's be real. I was the only one whose hair was long enough to go into the pigtails.
Oh, of course. Yeah. But yes, so Sam and I have always joked about that being our meeting experience, but it was true. Like, we met, hung out a little, well, I mean, I guess just talked briefly at Impact, but then we ran into each other really quick as soon as college started.
We had four classes together first semester because we were in the same major for a hot minute.
Yeah, we had at least a few classes together. We were always around each other, so.
Yeah.
So yes, that's a long, long time ago. So yeah, Sam was definitely my first college friend and kept in touch all these years. And Sam has a big music background that we'll get to shortly, but I guess so I don't get off format. Usually we do a thing that I call current spins, but it doesn't have to be current music. Normally with me, it's stuff that I'm just currently getting into and really enjoying. So it's very loosely. So I'm going to say let's cue to the theme song. So 1, 2, 3.
Current spins, what you've been listening to. Current spins, it can be old and new. Current spins.
All right. So, Sam, what have you been currently listening to recently?
So, generally, the way that I hear new music now is either through the Facebook group that we're both part of where people share music, or I just go to the Spotify list. There's all the random daily mixes that it puts together for you based on what you already listened to. The recent release radar, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. So I hear all these new things, and my typical, my kind of modus operandi is to hear a song, and if I like it, then I add it to my starred playlist. And then when I don't feel like listening to new stuff, then I just go through and listen to my starred playlist. So I've been hearing a lot of new music in various genres, and a lot of it's really old, and some of it's stuff that other people have known about for years that just were never on my radar. So one of them, there's a Canadian pop rock band called Marianas Trench. Have you heard of them?
I've heard of them, but nothing comes to mind other than just the name.
Okay, yeah, so they've got a few, like, they have concept albums. It's really hard to, like, it's hard to stick them in a genre. So I just say rock because rock is kind of all-encompassing. They're kind of emo-y, kind of punk, kind of pop, but also kind of, like, symphonic. But they've got a couple, several concept albums. They have one called Astoria that's kind of based on Goonies. They have another one called Ever After, which is what I've been listening to a lot, is the title track from that one. But there's also a fun piece of trivia that their lead singer, Josh Ramsey, co-wrote the song Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been listening. To them, and some other just sort of various picks from my little starred playlist. There's a band called Matthew Good Band, or maybe it's just Matthew Good, maybe it's a solo artist. But he has a song called Giant, and it starts out with like a cheerleader kind of thing, and you think it's going to be this like upbeat anthem rock thing, and then what actually fades in is not what you would expect. It's hard to describe, but if I had to try, it would be like a more happy version of Deftones.
Very interesting.
But it fits and it flows really well. And there's a really great chorus to it. It's just there's not as much notation change and not as much hard beat as you'd think there would be, but it still blends really well with this cheer going on in the background.
Cool.
And then also the artist Wren Weaver, she had a song about 5 years ago called Octahate that was a real electronic pop song. Well, she has another song on that album called The Traveling Song that is a more just an acoustic folk song, and I really have been digging that one lately too.
Did you share that in the group at any point?
Probably. I know that I shared the first one, the Marianas Trench one. I don't know if I shared the Rin Weaver one.
Because I heard her name recently, and so I was just trying to think anywhere else I might have.
Yeah, so when I heard, when this song came up on one of the lists, I thought maybe she had a new album out. This is actually from the same album that Octahate was on.
Okay.
And then there's a band called Auto Heart that I don't even know how... I'm just bad at describing genres, I guess. It's rock, but it's like pop rock, or it's almost like somebody with a gruff voice who normally would have been a metal singer decided to be in a pop band instead. But they've got a song called Factories that's a really good song, and it's let me find the album name because I've already forgotten it. The album is called Punch. And that whole album is good, but Factories is probably my favorite.
Nice. Well, you're not alone on the having trouble describing genres, because sometimes, like, unless they're just cookie cutter and fit into just one, it can be kind of hard to find that anyway, because honestly, genres seems like they're made up all the time.
Oh, yeah. Like the different... That's why, yeah. And that's why I generally just say rock, because rock is... an all-encompassing genre. I mean, there can be country that's rock. There can be, you know, there could be anything that's also kind of rock.
Right. Well, cool. That sounds like a nice assortment of stuff. I'll have to check those out. Like I said, I know some of that sounds familiar. I cannot remember how much I've actually listened to, because so much music is shared in that group that I obviously, you know, don't get a chance to listen to all of it.
Yeah, and I really probably only share about one song a week in there anymore. I used to be in there all the time.
Right.
And you know what I'll do after we're done here on Twitter? I'll make a playlist of anything that I talk about tonight and stick it on that Spotify playlist, and we can share that link.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good idea. There was
listeners or viewers of our audio podcast at home.
No, I've totally got a camera set up in your place that I've never been to your newest place, but I set it up anyway. Had Russell do it.
Okay, so you're probably having a lot of nightmares.
Yes, but I always say viewers a lot of times too, and I'm like, thank God this is not a video recording one. I do not want a video podcast.
No.
So my current spins, just like last month, is just going to be stuff I heard at a concert recently, because I've been lucky enough to go to two in the last 2 months. But last weekend, Greg from Hard Driving Fanboys and our friend Andrew Chandler Fraser Garner, the 14th, went to... Destin, Florida, and saw one of our favorite singers, the lead singer of Alter Bridge, Miles Kennedy. He was doing a solo show down there to promote his solo album. And I was super, super excited for it because, I mean, anybody that knows me or has listened to any of these shows, you're going to hear me talk about Alter Bridge off and on, or pretty much every episode probably. But I love, love, love his voice. I love the band, but it's really cool to get to see somebody in a more intimate setting for a concert.
I agree.
That's becoming one of my favorite things, whereas before I was just wanting to go to all-out rock shows. Now I'm kind of enjoying these intimate settings a lot better.
It's because we're getting old.
That's definitely part of it. We went to that show to see him, but honestly, I mean, he blew me away. He did a whole lot of different songs. Like, he did a solo album, but he interspersed Slash songs in there, because he recorded three albums so far with Slash, and tours as a vocalist for that. He also did a random Iron Maiden song, The Trooper, which was really cool.
Nice!
Yeah. And then, of course, he did a couple Alter Bridge songs in there. They did a couple songs from his first semi-big band, Mayfield 4. That was right before Alter Bridge. And I'm trying to think. That might be it. But anyway, it was really cool. A lot of people, I know some of my friends, we all love Miles Kennedy, but the solo album, it's great, but it's such a style that it's not our normal go-to. So it's not something that that immediately grabbed us like some of the other stuff does.
Right.
Because it's got some folk elements, Americana, just some of everything in there, but it's not nearly as rocking as what we're used to, and not just your straightforward pop either. So it was just kind of didn't grab as much, but the way he did it at concert and did, you know, blended different song settings and stuff like that, it really helped. And now I love the album even more. But the thing I want to talk about even more than that is the opener. It was a band I'd heard about from one of my frequent guests, Andy Helene, Walk-In Papers. And they're out of Washington State.
Is that Walking Papers or Walk-In Papers?
Like, oh, sorry. Yes, my enunciation's bad. Walking, like, I went.
I was actually just making a dumb joke.
Oh, well.
God, David.
Sorry, with the way I talk, I frequently get asked, well, actually, what I said. I wish it was about Christopher Walken.
I agree. Like, they just do covers of existing songs, but they put random rests in.
Yes, that would be amazing. But the Walking Papers, they're going to be the most difficult genre for me to describe. But, I mean, I'm just going to call them kind of hard rock. Like, there's definitely that feel to it a little bit, but it's kind of slowed down, brings in some bluesy influence, brings in some folksy, like, storytelling elements. But they're just really incredible as to see them live, because the lead singer is so energetic and has a really unique voice. Like, it's gruff, but it's not like your typical generic early 2000s hard rock gruff. Like, I don't know. It's, you got to listen to it. I'll share a song.
Yeah.
But there's even now a saxophone player in the band, and a couple of the songs, the bassist played stand-up bass instead of just your typical bass.
Nice.
So it was just a really unique experience. So I definitely recommend them. Let me see a couple. The song I'm most likely going to put on the beginning of this episode is going to be called Two Tickets in a Room. That one's got a really good rockin' vibe to it, so that will most likely be the intro. But there's another great one, Capital T, Your Secret's Safe With Me. That was a really great one live. So, yeah, there's stuff all over the place. And that one's from, I think it was 2013. Yeah, 2013 was the one I'm referencing. But they also did a new one this past year that is good, but it hasn't grabbed me as much. And that one's just Walk-In Papers 2, WP2. So I don't think they go too much into the name of the album process. They just do self-titled. But yeah, they're definitely a band worth checking out. And they seemed pretty chill after the show. I got to speak to them and were very approachable, which is always nice.
Oh, definitely. I mean, how long did we hang out with Brett Dutter after his solo show?
A long, long, long time.
Yeah.
Hopefully we didn't get on his nerves at all.
I'm sure we did, but that's okay.
Probably a mixture of that, but he was probably also super happy to have somebody there that was for him, because I think most everybody else didn't have a clue who he was at that show. So yeah, that's my newest one. There's tons of other stuff I've been listening to, but that's the most important that stood out to me that I wanted to reference this episode. So, we're going to get into music memories, and this is where we kind of just go into the background of the guest, if it's their first time. So, cue the music memories jingle.
Music memories, what are your music memories?
Ah. All right.
You want me to sing it?
No. Oh. Do you remember it?
No.
Okay. I was going to think that would be really interesting if you did. All right. So what is one of your first music memories, Sam?
Honestly, the most prominent early music memory I have is the Oliver and Company soundtrack on cassette that we had when I was about 5 years old. I saw the movie in theaters the first time when it was originally released, not when they re-released it in the 90s, and loved it, and somebody, I don't even know how we got it, my mom bought it for us or what, but we had the soundtrack on cassette, and I would listen to it and wear it out, and I'm sure that that's actually what eventually happened to it, is I wore it out from listening to it too much.
Right.
But there's so much on there. You've got Billy Joel, you've got Huey Lewis. It's just such a great, like, that's really, Little Mermaid gets a lot of the credit for the Disney Renaissance, which it deserves, but Oliver and Company definitely paved the way for that, adding in some of that pop rock music to, or that, you know, that popular music to the Disney films.
Nice. And what year is that movie from?
86 or 87, I think is when it came out.
Okay.
Yeah, it had Billy Joel as Dodger, Dom DeLuise in a non-Don Bluth film. I think that Joey Lawrence actually did the voice of Oliver back when he was just a kid.
Nice.
Bette Midler, Cheech Marin.
That is.
Have you seen the movie?
I'm sure I did when I was a child, but I don't remember it very well at all.
It's supposedly a retelling of Oliver Twist, but with cats and dogs on the streets of New York. But it really has nothing to do with, like, other than an orphan named Oliver meeting somebody named Dodger who's got a gang run by someone named Fagin. Beyond that, there's really nothing Oliver and Company about it. But it's about cats and dogs, and they sing.
Nice. All right.
And that one I don't think you can find on Spotify, so I won't be able to put anything on the list unless there's covers.
Okay. Well, maybe YouTube has it or something.
I guarantee you YouTube has it, unless the mouse's lawyers have taken it down.
That is a very good point. I love things that nobody cares enough to take down, like the Return to Riverdale, just the whole movie. I still need to watch the whole thing. I just sought out a couple scenes, mainly the rap scene from that. But
we watched the whole thing. We went. It was when Russell and Nick were in town, and they told us about it. And so we went and home, and we watched the entire thing.
Nice.
And we're like, okay, that is the thing that was made. I love seeing some of the cast members though, because they had Mary Swanson from Dumb and Dumber. I don't know the actress's name. She played Betty, and then her fiance was played by the guy who is their lawyer in Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay.
So that was a fun little pull.
Nice. Yeah, I need to go back and watch the whole thing. But I love it when things like that are, you know, up on those sites, because I mean a lot of these things you can't find legitimately otherwise. So it's nice when you can find them that way.
And if they would make them legit, people would pay for them.
Of course, yeah.
Like, George Lucas could make a killing off the Star Wars Holiday Special if he officially released it.
Of course. Yeah, I know. That's always been mind-blowing that you can't. I mean, I know he's ashamed of it, but still, like, people want to see it.
Yeah.
Because it's entertaining just for its train wreck nature.
Oh, absolutely.
So, what was your first concert?
So I grew up in a pretty religious home, and most of the concerts, or even what you would call concerts, were where some artist would come, like some semi-popular Christian artist would come to my church. And so the first specific concert that I remember was an artist by the name of Babbie Mason, who was a Christian soul singer, very popular in the 80s and early 90s. She came to my church and did a concert, and I saw her. But I don't know if that really counts. The earliest concerts I remember are going to, I'm from Huntsville, Alabama, where they used to have an annual music festival called the Big Spring Jam. So I went to that several years in a row. I saw a variety of people. I saw Three Doors Down once. Who else was there? Edwin McCain was there one year. And then the first, and this is not even close to my first concert, but one of my first major and favorite concert memories was freshman year at Troy when Sister Hazel came and did a show in the parking lot of the stadium. And it was so much fun, and it was such a great show. Like, I still cannot get over how good the quality was and how much fun it was. And I think part of it is just that, you know, the opening of the night before the first football game of the year. And so, you know, school had been going on for a few weeks. I'd met you, I'd met a couple of other people, but I didn't know anybody too well at that point. And I was feeling just kind of lonely, like I was in a new place where I didn't really know anybody. And something about that concert just brought me out of my shell. Because I think I ran into you there, we hung out, and I met one of our best friends, Keith, I met him at that concert.
Nice.
Just randomly. And that's, like, everything about that. And maybe it's just rose-colored memory glasses, but I remember that being just one of the best shows. The music was perfect in terms of how I remember it. I went home and, like, looked up the names, because they played the entire Chasing Daylight album, pretty much. And this was months before Chasing Daylight even came out. So, like, I put it on the calendar when it was going to come out, and the names of the songs that they had played that I wanted to hear later. Established new friendships. The energy was so high. The music was phenomenal. It was like this wave of sound that was just mesmerizing.
Now, you were up kind of close to the stage too, weren't you? Or like maybe midways?
Yeah, I was. Were you not up there with me?
I was not. No, I went. I know I saw you at the show, but we had gotten there later. I went with a couple of my high school friends, one of which had come from out of town, and so I think we were running a little behind to get to the show.
That's right. I hung out with a lot of people that were part. That we were all part of the same group with you and I. The same like circle of friends.
Right.
But yeah, I was up pretty close to the stage.
Yeah, I enjoyed the show a lot, but I think that added a lot to your enjoyment of it even more, just being up close, because that does help a lot, and especially those kind of shows.
Yeah, and there was just some kind of concert high that I had. It was magical. It was just magical.
Nice. I usually just claim that as my first concert, because it's the first one that really got me hooked. My first actual concert was Lee Greenwood, at a Troy game, when I was just visiting the school to decide if I wanted to go there or not.
Okay.
Yeah, and my dad made me stay for it. I didn't want to, but he...
Is this right around 9/11 time? Lee Greenwood concerts, I think, were like legally mandated for all citizens to attend.
You know, it's very possible, because I visited on my junior and senior year of high school, Troy, during the football season for a tour and everything, and so I'm not 100% sure which year it was, but that would make sense. So it's very possible that that was fall of 2001, but yeah.
Okay.
All right, so what's the first album that you bought?
So going back to growing up listening to just religious music, the first album I bought, this is kind of a fun poll though, it was the original self-titled DC Talk.
Oh my.
Back to the point before they even started using their fake names, back when Toby Mac was Toby McKeon.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad. It's white boy rap.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But I definitely bought it, and I listened to it a lot. And later, I just realized I didn't like it and listened to other things instead. But I think it was because I was at Walmart, and I was looking through all the music, and I only had, like, I had a limited amount of money. And this was one that I could afford with what I had at the time. I was about 9 years old. And this was something I could afford, so I bought it.
Nice.
Yeah, in terms of that being the one I bought. But the first album that I really just wore down listening to was still that Oliver & Company soundtrack.
Cool. Yeah, I always ask ones that we bought because, I don't know, that just usually was something that we were really craving. And so, because like our limited income sometimes led to that being such an important album. Doesn't always end up that way. But as I know, like sometimes some of my earlier cassettes were just gifts, and I didn't have nearly as much enthusiasm about them or long-lasting excitement.
Yeah, the cassettes that I really had more enthusiasm about were they were actually cassettes where I would make mixtapes based on requesting songs on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, you know, I'd fill up tapes with that. And then I got into a thing around maybe ninth grade where it would be half of the, like, one side of the tape was songs off the radio, the other side of the tape was songs off of CDs. So there was plenty of that going on, too.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that DC Talk. I got into DC Talk in their later albums when they were actually singing and doing much better songs than their original stuff. But, like, when we got a good Christian bookstore in Montgomery, I found the earlier stuff and purchased them, and I was just appalled at how cheesy their early stuff was. I mean, probably all of it's probably cheesy now.
Oh, it's all bad.
But that early stuff.
I'm
going
to go ahead and say it's all bad, but I didn't know any better when I was kids.
Right, but that early stuff, that white boy rap was just so awful. So, yeah, it's one of those things I think everybody should hear just to laugh at.
I agree.
And then the final question is, and obviously I know the answers to this, but for the listeners, do you sing or play any instruments?
Nope, next question. Yep, I have. I've sang since I was a kid. And I've played instruments. I think the first thing I played was the trumpet when I was 8 years old. Switched to tuba, started playing guitar. That's the natural progression, trumpet to the guitar.
Right.
So I guess I started playing guitar and tuba around the same time because that was freshman year of high school. Tried to teach myself piano over and over again and never really could. Still have a piano, still try to teach myself from time to time, one of these days.
I mean, you can play some basics on piano, though.
I can play basics, but it's, I don't know. Maybe I just have really high standards, and I don't meet them.
Right.
And I've been in a few bands. You were in one of them with me.
Yes.
Two, if you count Titanium Death Fetus.
Of course we do.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, we won a talent competition with that was so full of tons of competition. It wasn't at all just like two other people that performed.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. But I mean, I think I had a band. I was in my first band when I was, I guess we started when I was in eighth grade, and I actually played bass in that because I didn't know how to play anything, and bass is the one that you play when you don't know how to play anything.
Right.
Sorry to bass players. It's actually not true, but when you don't know how to play anything and the music is not complicated at all,
right,
sometimes you play bass.
Right. If you're an accomplished bass player or like a difficult music and stuff like that, bass can be incredibly difficult to do, but definitely in basic music, it's the easiest
one. Really simple music, it was the one that I could do. And then we actually ended up getting another bass player, and I became lead singer. And we got a couple more members, and we actually went to a recording studio. We pulled our money, got recording time, got a day at a recording studio, and recorded a four song little. I guess it was kind of an EP. And that was we did that when I was a junior in high school. So I was 16 when I got my recording studio experience, and then throughout college, I would get together with Russell Sellers, my podcast co-host from 90s to Nothing. We would write songs. You were there sometimes too, David.
Yes.
We'd go to a recording studio around Florala near Andalusia. We also recorded at a guy's house when we were in that band called Opponent Process.
Yes.
After college, I came back, and my brothers had a band called 4 Mile Post, and I played bass in that one and sang some. My brother Thomas was the lead singer, but that was an interesting experience because there was no guitar. It was bass, drums, and piano.
Right.
And then the members of that, after one of my brothers left for college, then we actually started another band with, it was me, two of my brothers, our cousin, and then two other friends. And that band was called Anchor's Eye, and it was, that was probably musically the best band that I was in.
It's the one I like the most of what I've heard. I know I've heard some from, maybe not your high school one, I can't remember if that was Contrast, your first one.
That was Contrast.
Yeah, I think I did, but I don't remember it very well, but probably. I know I saw you with Anchor's Eye, and that was really enjoyable.
Anchor's Eye was definitely the best. Like, we had a whole album written, and mostly recorded, and then I don't even know what happened other than they just didn't feel like, the other members did not feel like doing the rest.
Right.
And aside from that, I also started doing musical theater. And I did that for a few years. I played lead in Godspell. I was in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Guys and Dolls. So I did a lot of singing on stage. My disadvantage there is I'm the world's worst dancer. So you kind of have to be good at dancing to do musical theater, but I'm not. So
I didn't even think about that, but yeah. that does go with it.
Yeah, when I was in Guys and Dolls, I remember I got the part that I got was vocally the most challenging in the show because I was playing nicely. And he's also known as being the fat guy, which at that time I weighed 300 pounds, so it was perfect. But also, there was a scene where I had to dance. And my big issue with dancing is I can't remember what comes next.
Right.
So my face is always scrunched up in concentration trying to remember my next move. I can't make it look natural or fun. And of course, my our dance partners, because we were me and my friend Andrew were doing these dances, and we were dancing with just these random girls that would walk on stage and be our dance partners. And they were all these girls were like trained dancers, and so they knew how to make it look great, and I did not. And then I found out later that they were all like, oh God, I don't want to dance with Sam, he's so bad. And I'm like, I don't blame any of you.
Nice.
Also, like, I think some of them were younger, and I was in my mid-20s, and that was just a little weird, but that's what happens in local theater.
Right, of course. Especially in a not-huge town. I mean, Huntsville's big, but it's not gigantic or anything.
This was the smallest, probably the smallest theater company in Huntsville, too, because it was in Madison.
Well, cool.
Yeah, so that's my performance experience. And oh, and I have a recorder in my lap, and I was going to pull it out and start playing right now, but now I'm not going to.
I almost asked you about that because I was shocked you said trumpet was before recorder. I thought it
no, so recorder was first, but recorder is like, I don't count recorder because it is kind of the bridge to being in band. You know, you do recorder for a year and then you do band. So I wasn't going to count recorder because I didn't really start playing recorder as recorder until really I was in like later high school and I was in eighth grade because it was when Titanic came out, and I wanted to learn the Titanic theme.
Of course.
And I did, and I was just really good at it, maybe. Nobody ever said anything otherwise.
Nice.
And you know, now that I think about it, when I was in seventh grade, I got a harmonica for Christmas, and I played that for a little bit, too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember being obsessed with the Titanic soundtrack. We played that in whatever your band that was. Because we played several songs off of it. And I thought that was like the coolest thing ever.
We didn't because we were at a religious school and there were complaints when somebody wanted to do anything Titanic related.
Anything what?
Anything Titanic related.
Okay. Because of like the sex scenes from the movie or just because it wasn't Christian?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the sex scenes were the bigger issue.
I imagine so. I just know they keep going.
But we did Braveheart a couple of years later.
Oh.
But I think that was because the person who had complained about the Titanic boobs didn't have a problem with the Braveheart boobs. Or no, they had left school, so they weren't there to complain.
I remember we played Tequila in high school band for a while until somebody complained about us playing a song with the word tequila in it. And I'm like, can't we just take out and not shout the word? It was such a controversial thing. We have to get rid of it.
Oh, I mean, we were going to play Louie Louie, and we couldn't play that one because there's an urban legend that the lyrics are dirty, even though it's not true.
Right, right. I mean, you can make the lyrics dirty if you want to, but that's any song.
Yeah, I mean, I make all lyrics dirty.
Of course.
Remember when we used to sing Reliant K?
I do. Let's not do that right now, but yes, I remember that very well.
I've told my wife about that. She's like, please don't do that anymore.
I actually just remembered that not maybe a couple months ago and just started giggling in my car. I mean, manly laughing in my car.
Totally.
Yeah.
Tee-hee.
Smoker Holly voice. Tee-hee. That became my thing for a while there. But anyway, let's get on to the meat of it, of the episode, and that is going to be our comfort albums. And for this, like, I mean, you could consider it a feel-good thing or just something, a time when you need something that kind of peps you up, because I go through that a ton. I just need something to pep up my mood or change my mood, because I'm a moody little whiny person sometimes. And so music is so powerful, it's just nice to change things up and pop something in that can totally transform what mood I'm in most of the time. Of course, sometimes it might not work, but that's the idea behind this concept. And hopefully I think Sam was on board with that same understanding, I think, right?
More or less. I think that I took it from the perspective of what is the music that literally does just kind of alter my mood.
Okay.
And what generally alters my mood in terms of music is if it brings me back to another time. And sometimes it's not even necessarily a good time, mm-hmm. but bringing me back to the past through music is somehow comforting to me.
Right.
Even if it brings me back to a sad memory.
I got you. Yeah, that that kind of happened with one of my old topics, revisiting old music, and while I was driving through my hometown, kind of was a mixture of all of that.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah, so, go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Oh, so what is the first one you want to talk about? Obviously, we'll take turns and alternate back and forth between them, but these are in no particular order.
So, in college, around my sophomore year, I went through this, and I guess really this phase lasted the rest of my college career to an extent, but I went through this, I found out about progressive metal, and I turned into kind of one of those people who's really annoying about progressive rock, which is definitely a thing. I was teetering on the edge of becoming, you know, a very smelly person who sits around yelling about progressive rock all the time. Luckily, I didn't go all the way, but there was some music I picked up during that time that it really helped me figure out what I liked in a song, and then I could look for those qualities in other songs in other genres. But the one that anyone who was into progressive rock around that time knows the album, and it's Dream Theater Scenes from Memory. It was at that point the most well done concept album that I'd ever heard. It tells a story with twists. It has a variety of genres. It has so much emotion in it. And it's one that even today, when I pull songs out from that and listen to them, I'm reminded of that time in my life.
Nice.
The best song on the album to me is the song Home, which is where the phrase Scenes from a Memory comes. And it has it starts out kind of quiet with like a sitar playing, and it just builds from there, and it becomes just this super heavy metal thing, and then the vocals come in and they're so powerful and the harmonies are so powerful, and then when the melody comes in for the chorus, it just grabs you.
Nice. Yeah, I know. I remember you going through a huge Dream Theater phase. I'm not sure which songs by them I know, but I definitely know some of their stuff.
Yeah. If you got them from me during that time, then this stuff is on there.
Right.
I guarantee it. It was also when I started working out in my 20s, it was the perfect music for like if I was on the treadmill or something, because the songs are like 20 minutes long. So you just get on the treadmill for the period of time of one song, and then you're done with your cardio.
Very good point, yeah. And it probably was better for your mentally than a lot of the I hate myself rock music that I listen to make me work out.
Yeah.
Because most of the energetic rock, or not most of it, but a lot of the energetic rock of the early 2000s was just, you know, just whiny, I'm an awful person, or the person I used to date is an awful person kind of music. Nice.
How about you? What would you say is your first one?
Well, the first one I'm going to mention is A Night at the Opera by Queen.
I like that.
Yeah, it's an album. I didn't get it until way later, but I knew a lot of the songs off of it because of a couple of the compilations I had. But it is just such a good mixture of songs. Like, it starts out with some anger, Death on Two Legs. But then there's just the really pretty song, Lazin' on a Sunday Afternoon, with Freddie Mercury on piano, and that's more of a poppy song.
Yeah.
The ridiculous song, it's a good song, but the fact that the lyrics are insane. I'm in Love with My Car by Roger Taylor, the drummer, and he sings on it. then one of my favorite songs off of it, You're My Best Friend. Then Seaside Rendezvous is really good. Prophet Song's really good. but then the beautiful Love of My Life, and then of course the one that everybody knows, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Wait, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah. but of course that is just a song that can pep up anybody. If you love rock music, or just if you know Wayne's World, anything like that, picture anything from it, it just kind of takes you to a fun time. And just that, anything Queen just cheers me up, because Freddie Mercury is one of the most accomplished, but also just one of the most charismatic people. And whether you're watching him sing or just listening to him sing, it just, with me, it exudes happiness, yeah, for me at least. And so that album, in particular, is just so great because it's got such a great mixture of different styles and some good peppy stuff on there as well. And I think it's kind of the second album that they really experimented heavily on, just trying to blend not just the metal stuff they were originally going for, but more of the kind of pop and weird songs that are some of their biggest hits from the 70s.
Yeah. Tell you a fun Queen story. Okay. I was at karaoke one night, and they said that if anyone sang a Queen song, they'd get a free drink. So I got up and sang Fat Bottom Girls and got a free drink.
Nice. Yeah, that was one of the songs that I heard in high school, and I did not know much about Queen at the time. Like, I had Classic Queen, which didn't have any... I think I only had kind of like one more risque song on it, but like... when I later got the CD that had Fat Bottom Girls, I was not expecting that.
Yeah.
It didn't even sound like the same band as a lot of the other stuff. But, yeah, that one was really funny to me the first time I heard it. Because, like, the first album I heard by them was Classic Queen, which is a compilation I heard when I was, maybe, like, 10 or 11.
I think so, I remember you talking about that one.
Yeah. I actually covered that one on my second episode of this podcast. As that's the one I had the biggest emotional response to, and just think it's a great compilation. But yeah, like I said, Night at the Opera, I throw on, it cheers me up, makes me happy, and it's just a really good album. I'm not going to say it's their best. A lot of people do say it's their best, but I'm not 100% convinced on that. and I've been on a Queen kick because I watched Bohemian Rhapsody 2 months ago now. Gosh.
Oh yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
It's good. I know a lot of people hated on it because of some of the inaccuracies and stuff like that, but that's any movie. They're going to mess up the timeline. It is what it is, but it's enjoyable.
Yeah, I will probably see it when it's on digital.
Right. Well, what is your second album?
So the second one I've got, and I had a hard time pinning down the album. The band is, you either love them or hate them, I think, and more people, or I say that, a lot of people, I think, just kind of like them, but they were one of the first bands when I was in high school that really grabbed me, and that's the Goo Goo Dolls. And when trying to nail down which album is actually the one that takes me back, I landed where I don't think that I would have, where I wouldn't have thought that I would have, but it's Superstar Car Wash.
Nice.
It's their fourth album. It was their first album on Warner Records, I believe. So, it opens with Falling Down, which has just this great guitar opener. I remember how I heard that song, or how I even heard that album. I bought the album, like, as a gift for a girl that I liked, and ended up keeping it because I liked the album so much. I bought it used, so there was no shrink wrap around it, so I opened it to listen to it first, and I was like, I think I'm just probably going to keep this. And I think this was also the first album where John Resnick actually sang the majority of the songs, and there was just a few of Robbie's songs put in there, that's when they finally realized that John is really needs to be their vocalist.
Oh, of course.
But I remember, yeah, Falling Down, Burning Up, Girl Right Next to Me was one that I really liked because I was 17 and it was about girls.
Right.
We're the Normal was the one that I knew from the album before buying it. It ended up being probably one of my least favorites on there, but it's still a pretty good song. So that one just kind of like it was one that there's so, it almost is counterintuitive because it feels like there's so little going on, but you hear more every time.
Nice. I remember you were really big into Girl Right Next to Me still in college. I remember, because you're the person that got me into Goo Goo Dolls even more outside of, Dizzy Up the Girl, because that was the main one I was familiar with.
That was the first one that, I mean, that was the one that got me into them, was Dizzy Up the Girl. But then I ended up really liking Superstar Car Wash and Boy Named Goo a whole lot.
Oh, yeah. I love Boy Named Goo. That was probably, that's way up there on my list of...
Yeah, that's a good one. It's just one that you turn off near the end because it's all of a sudden a couple of cover songs that Robbie sings instead of instead of what you've actually bought the album for.
So. Right, right.
And then, of course, I think the band themselves, they hate Name, which was kind of what put them on the map because they think it's too sappy. But then they turn around and did more sappy songs than Dizzy Up the Girl, and they liked those.
So. Right. Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. Well, nice. Any other thoughts on
that one?
What'd you say?
I still haven't seen them live. Missed so many opportunities to.
Yeah, they're a band that would definitely love to see them live. Would have been even cooler in the 90s or early 2000s, but still. Oh, yeah. As long as
they come to Atlanta fairly often. I just always forget about it until it's too late.
Okay. Well, we'll have to look into that. Maybe make that a thing. As long as they're one of those bands that still realizes they need to play a lot of old stuff. I'm good with it.
I think that the some of the like taped live shows that I've seen, they are still playing a lot of old stuff.
Okay.
But I think if I go nostalgic concert, Hootie and the Blowfish is touring this summer, so that's where I'm going.
Nice. Yeah, I was considering them. I it was really funny because I was just talking about them not long ago, and kind of wondered why they'd never gotten back together, and then they do.
So well, I mean, Darius Rucker was doing his country career.
Right. Well, and knew he was, but I still just figured he could take a break from that at any point because just nostalgia is so high right now. Like, nostalgia acts from the 90s in particular are doing so well.
I mean, all the movies are revivals. All the TV shows are based on movies.
Right. Well, I've been going back and forth in my head which one I wanted to talk about next. I think I'm just going to randomly pick this one and go with it. And that is going to be an album that I briefly mentioned during Kurt Spins a long time back. So nobody probably remembers that I mentioned it, so it's a little cheat. But Metallica's Reload.
All right.
And I'm going to grab that one for comfort, mainly for the fact that that album is attached to me in high school and, well, the end of middle school, early high school, and just... that time is just all awkward, and you just need something to comfort you on a regular basis in that. And that's what this album did for me. I know I've mentioned before, like Metallica, some people think of it as just so dark and just assume it's super negative, but it's not. And even sometimes when it is being negative, it doesn't take me that place, if that makes any sense. Like it just energizes me and helps me deal with what I need to deal with and move on. But like I can hear most anything off this album, and it just makes me happy, and I can sing along with it or sing the drum part or the guitar part, whatever I choose to do at the time. It's just a lot of fun. I mean, the song people know the most, of course, is Fuel and The Memory Remains. But I really dig into some of the deeper cuts, such as like Carpe Diem, Baby.
Low Man's lyric is my favorite.
Yes, that's my favorite to sing, for sure. And that's definitely up there in probably my top five of their most unique songs that you would never expect them to do. Because it is.
But it works so well. Like,
right.
It's like because the emotion in that song is like, honestly, yeah, they're yelling in Fuel and they're not yelling in Low Man's lyric. They're just singing. But Low Man's lyric has 10 times the emotional expression of Fuel because you feel what he's saying in Logan's lyric, where in my opinion, at least, you don't feel what he's saying in Fuel. He's just out there doing his thing.
Right. Fuel is just a straightforward rock song. There's not a whole lot to it. I mean, it's as catchy as can be, and I see why it's
still used. Oh, it's great. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying in terms
of course.
Yeah, in terms of like, I can wrap, like, coming back to the theme of comfort, I can wrap myself up in Logan's lyric.
Mm.
And it's like a blanket of sound.
I think you played that one, or a version of that, of course, like on guitar, and we were just goofing off with it at the cabin that year, like in 2010,
yes, yeah. At the cabin. I remember, because I would have known it by then, because I remember I learned it around 2009.
Okay. Like,
because of some stuff that I was going through, and I needed to sit down and sing that song, and so I learned how to play it so that I could just sit there and play it.
Yeah, and pretty much it was just like me, you, and Greg really got into it, and everybody else just kind of looked at us because they weren't familiar with it. Because it is far from a hit, but it is an incredible song. And isn't it on the album cut, isn't it like an accordion, a kind of a main part of the song?
It's something like that. I thought it was a melodica for some reason, but
it could be. You know more about music than I do, so it's very possible that's what it is. I just know it's
fake my way through a lot of that. Sometimes I have to send my brother a link to a song and say, "Can you tell me what instrument's going on here?"
Which brother?
Will.
Will. Okay.
Though, you know, three of them have music degrees, so I guess I can send it to any of them.
Well, that's why I was confused. That's why I didn't know which one it would be. One of my other favorites is the most bizarre song, and it probably shouldn't comfort me, but it does, and that is Fixer. It is just a long song that just has a lot of bizarre guitar parts and effects and everything, and it's brings in some themes from voodoo and just all kinds of weird stuff in there. But it's just... I remember that being one of my favorite songs to listen to while I played GoldenEye in high school. And that would just be a great way to get out some frustration and everything, would be to listen to Fixer on repeat while I just went around killing Bond villains and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, see, GoldenEye reminds me of Weird Al's Bad Hair Day, because that was 7th grade for me. It was playing GoldenEye at my friend Andy's house while we all sang along to Everything You Know Is Wrong.
Nice. And then three other songs I want to throw out a little love to is Where the Wild Things Are, Prince Charming, and Attitude. Those I don't ever hear anybody talk about, but I love those. Just between the anger that are in some of those, or just the unique feel to them. I don't know. Those are just three really good songs that I enjoy. I know most people, if they're Metallica fans, either hate the 90s Metallica or they might prefer Load to Reload. And if I'd gotten Load first, I might would have preferred it, but I got Reload first a long time before I ever heard Load. And so I don't know. Reload just has that emotional connection for me.
Yeah. And I agree with you on the, I don't think that the hate for 90s Metallica is deserved any more than I think that the hate for non-punk Goo Goo Dolls is deserved. I think that when your sound evolves, you go with what works.
Right.
I understand, like, the opposition to changing to be more popular, but maybe they changed as an experiment and they liked where they ended up.
And I truly feel that's what they were doing, because, I mean, they had done 4 metal albums, like, just metal. And so it was time by the Black Album to start changing things up. And as the 90s went on, it was just...
I agree.
Yeah, I think it was just time to move things on, because as much as I love that style of Metallica, when I go back and listen, I usually go to the 90s. Occasionally I'll go to the 80s, but mostly I go to the 90s. And I mean, how many albums do you need of just like 8 and 9 minute songs in classic metal style? You don't need that.
Yeah. And I mean, as much as I love Death Magnetic, I think that it was a mistake for them to listen to the people who say you need to go back to your old style.
Right.
I mean, I do like the metal songs, but also I think maybe they could have had more Unforgiven 3 type stuff on there.
Right. Oh, I wish they had. That's actually one thing I loved about, it's not necessarily on the proper or the regular Hardwired to Self-Destruct, their 2016 album, but the third disc that had a lot of concert footage and some just covers and stuff that brought in more melodic elements. And so I thought that was really cool, because it was kind of the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
But I definitely understand what you're saying on Death Magnetic. I liked it because it kind of was like them proving some people wrong that they could still do it.
Oh, they absolutely did it. Like, they did it well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I were both there at the concert, and if I had to pick a tour to go to, we picked the right one.
Oh, for sure. I can't imagine going to the St. Anger tour.
Oh, God. I like that that's the only album they sang nothing from.
Well, you know, it's really funny is I went through a lot of their track listings from shows on that tour, and like it was only a couple shows into that tour where they stopped playing but like two songs from that album. They quickly realized, oh crap, nobody likes this. Yeah. I've got to play a couple songs just to try to sell the album, but let's just mainly play old stuff because everybody hates the new album.
Yep.
And so I thought that was pretty funny because most of the time bands will still keep trying to push the new album, whether it sucks or not. And no, I think they quickly realized that these fans might riot on us if we just force this new album on them.
Yeah.
So let's move on to number three. What's your third one, Sam?
So my third one's actually one that I know that we both love. I don't know if it made your list or not. At around the time that we went to see the Death Magnetic tour together was around the time that this album was coming out, and that was Our Lady Peace's Burn, Burn.
Oh, nice, yeah.
They are, hands down, one of my favorite bands. You know, I loved... I remember really loving Spiritual Machines, thinking that Gravity was a little disappointing, and then thinking Healthy and Paranoid Times was boring, but the more you listened to it, the more you liked it.
Right.
And so at this point, Healthy and Paranoid Times is actually one of my favorites. But something about Burn, Burn, and I think it's when it comes to the comfort theme and where I was in my life at that time. I had just bought my first home. It was the time of year, it was in the fall, so it was the time of year when, like, I tend to get kind of wistful and weird anyway. and we had just come back from this Metallica show. Like, so there were so many changes going on in my life, and I remember specifically the song from this album that even now, 10 years later, if I listen to, I get launched back into this. I get launched back into this this part of me where I just need the song, and it's Refuge.
Nice, yeah.
And I believe from what I can tell, he's singing to his child and saying, you know, the world's might be out to get you sometimes, but I'm your refuge. And the power, the vocal power of the chorus, it's one that it brings me back to just feeling so scared about the future and feeling so vulnerable about the future, but also feeling comforted by just this music and just this, we'll get through this. And the whole album is good, though. Don't get me wrong. That's the song that got this album on my list.
Right.
White Flags is phenomenal. All You Did Was Save My Life, Dreamland, Paper Moon. We Can Burn Out Like Candles Against the Paper Moon. The entire album, it is a comfort, really. I'm not very good with words today. But this is a comforting album.
Well, and even for me, I figured you might mention Refuge as the most comforting because I remember you liking that one and that being one of the most beautiful songs off of it. But I love just the weird acoustic breakdown in the middle of Monkey Brains.
I do too.
I think that should have been a separate song, like, or I wish they offered it as a separate song, just as a standalone, because there's more emotion in that than the rest of the song. At least it feels that way to me.
Yeah, I like it. I kind of liken it to almost the inverse of the Silverchair song from Young Modern when they sing the Thieving Birds, mm-hmm. and they kind of go from the slow to the fast to the slow. This one kind of does the opposite. It goes from the fast to the slow to the fast. And right. It does feel like two different songs.
It does. Like, it's fun in the moment, but like I just kind of wish I had that on its own, because that is such a great part of the song that, to me, that's what I seek out more for that song. Whereas originally I went to it for the energy and the fast version of it, because that's just what I usually go to. But that's what grabs me. Later years, I'm like, yeah, I kind of like just the acoustic breakdown. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
I think I realized that on the trip to Pittsburgh with you to see Juliana Theory. As I remember, this was one of the albums we listened to on the way there or the way back, one or the other.
I was probably asleep behind the wheel at that point. No, just because I remember that trip and have being like, oh God, I have to roll the windows down and blow air in my face.
Right. Yeah, I remember riding Copilot with you on the way up, and I kept trying to pick energetic stuff periodically, make sure I converse with you regularly to make sure you're awake, and then also help you find the right turns. But yeah, that was a ridiculously long drive.
I wouldn't change a thing about it, though.
Right. No, it was an amazing trip. Actually made my... did it? Yeah, it made my concert list.
Oh, yeah. I listened to that one.
I was thinking it should have, and I was second-guessing myself, as I often do.
Yeah, I was like, my mom was in town. I was like, oh, we're going to listen to David's podcast because I think I mentioned a lot of times.
Yes, that actually probably had the highest number of your mentions because so many of the concerts... that are important to me involve you. So, all right. Well, let's.
Except for all the altar pigeons.
Right. Well, of course. Yeah.
Even though I have seen them.
Was that a Big Spring Jam?
Yeah.
Okay. That would have had to be.
So I wasn't really paying attention. It was early in their thing.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Or I'm just remembering wrong, and they've never been there. Let's be real. I completely forgot that I'd seen Boyz II Men at Big Spring Jam one year. Till Russell was like, oh, I saw Boyz II Men. I was like, I didn't know you saw Boyz II Men. He's like, you were there.
Yeah.
what do you have?
Yeah, we weren't paying attention when Boyz II Men played anyway. We were only there for probably like two or three songs and then moved on.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Hootie and the Blowfish being there. And really liking them.
Nice. Yeah, it had to be a different year, though, because...
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, we would have stayed at the stage for them. Sorry, my voice is cracking a little bit. Okay, my third one's going to be Bee Gees' Greatest Hits.
Okay.
That, if I just want to get in a good mood, that is the perfect thing to throw on, because within minutes, I'm going to be laughing like a madman. I crack myself up all the time singing Bee Gees with my horrible falsetto that I still just love to do. And this song, obviously being the greatest hits, has such a great compilation of fun songs between Jive Talking, Tragedy, You Should Be Dancing, and then one song that probably makes me laugh more than it should just because the transition from low to high is so extreme is How Deep Is Your Love? Because there's such a good mixture. Like, they're singing lower register than they normally do during a big part of it, but then there's the high harmony that, of course, I try to do with extreme falsetto, and it just makes me happy. And I'm trying to think, that's probably the main ones that I go to on there.
I really don't have anything to add to that.
Well, you've been around me and Greg when we do our Bee Gees thing.
Oh, yeah. And I definitely appreciate it. I just don't have any, like, personal connection to Bee Gees' greatest hits.
Right, right.
I'm not going to be able to contribute to this part of the conversation.
And there's More Than a Woman. Yeah, let's see. Nights on Broadway is good. Nights on Broadway, I think, is the song that they that got me into the Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake version, which is what led to Greg and I doing the whole Bee Gees impersonations because they did the Barry Gibb talk show on SNL, whatever year that was.
And y'all dressed as the Bee Gees for Halloween one year, or am I...
Yes, no, that's totally a thing. That was 2008, I believe. Yeah, it had to be 2008.
Yeah, because 2007 was Matrix and Bennett.
Yes.
Or no, 2006 was Six. Matrix and Bennett.
Yeah, I missed 2007. I don't know if we didn't go or I missed it. I don't remember, but...
I was Green Lantern in 2007, so
I guess it was there. I don't remember dressing up that year, though. Interesting. Not important, though. But yes, the Bee Gees thing, we got, Greg got a horrible wig. Well, a semi-horrible. Mine was way worse. Mine was like a dollar wig from Walmart and made me look more like Howard Stern or a straight-haired Weird Al. But we just went around singing in horrible falsetto. And goes, you should be dancing, yeah! And I'm not going to go any more than that because if I go the high notes, it's going to be even louder and more obnoxious. But...
Yeah. We just
did that horrible impersonation the whole night and entertained ourselves or drove people crazy, but we enjoyed it, and we still.
I'm definitely listening to you and not just thinking about my own thing. But I was Green Lantern in 2008. I was Two-Face in 2007. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we didn't.
So 2008 was when you were BGs.
Okay. Yeah. And yeah,
we didn't do costume bowling in 2007.
Yeah, I was thinking we didn't because I didn't remember dressing up. Because I remember like in 05 when y'all first did costume bowling, and I didn't make it. But 2006 was Matrix and Bennett from Commando, and so that's one of the ones I remember. But yeah, BG's Greatest Hits, it's just a little fun thing to throw on, and always puts me in a good mood just because of the fun mixture of their music and just the bad falsetto, thinking of bad wigs, thinking about chest hair and crazy cool medallions, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, right now I think it would be a good time to take a quick break. We're going to let you listen to the ads, but we'll be right back, so don't go away.
Buy these products.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to the second half of Sunday Groove. Sam is, of course, still here with me to do comfort albums as the topic. And obviously you know this because you've been listening to the show. Hope you enjoyed our ads for all the other ridiculous number of podcasts that we have between the wrestling feeds and the pop feed. But there's tons and tons of great stuff on there, so I hope you check it out. But I have an important question for Sam right now is... What you doing on your butt? Ah, what you doing on your butt? Ah, you should be dancing. Sorry, I had to redeem my horrible Bee Gees earlier with the equally horrible but at least somewhat decent version of You Should Be Dancing. So are you on your butt right now, Sam?
Absolutely.
Well, you shouldn't be. You should be dancing and somehow, I guess, moving your computer around with you.
It would not be conducive to the audio quality of your podcast, David.
Yeah,
but
I don't care.
Speaking of Place to Be Nation pop podcasts, I am co-hosting a new one.
Yes.
It should, first episode should be out by the time that this goes out. It's called 90s to Nothing. Russell Sellers and I talk about 90s movies.
And what do you have coming up first?
So the one that's out now is for the holidays, and it's Home Alone.
Nice.
We do have a Twitter poll for the second one that should also be out by the time that this posts.
Nice. Yeah, I imagine by the time this comes out, y'all will be up for a little while. Because I think we got a good bit coming out this week. Nonetheless, if somehow they listened to this before, listening to 90s to Nothing, definitely check it out. It's been one that I've known was in the process for a while, but I'm very excited to hear it. And I just, of course, it's Christmas season, so really excited to hear y'all's thoughts on Home Alone, because that was one I actually just recently introduced my niece to.
Hey, here's a digression topic. Is the guest allowed to digress?
Ask you a question.
Let's watch some of your favorite Christmas songs.
Favorite Christmas songs.
Holiday songs.
Favorite Christmas songs. I don't know what favorites. I was singing. What's the controversial one this year? Maybe It's Cold Outside.
But that's always been a controversial one.
Yeah, I guess it should be, but I enjoy it. If you ever wondered what Ric Flair and JR singing it to each other would sound like, check out the newest. Well, that would be confusing. But anyway, one of the episodes of Hard Traveling Fanboys, and that happens.
Do they do that? Oh,
yes. Greg does his wonderful double duty singing to himself and expertly pulls off both parts. It's incredible. But I don't know. Like, I put me on the spot. I can't think of any off the top of my head like that are just huge to me. I was singing one earlier, and now I'm drawing a blank. What are some of yours?
So I have to put them in categories. I have to say, well, classic Christmas hymns, like the old Christmas carols spread like from hundreds of years ago. Like, so there have to be my favorite of those. There has to be my favorite classic Christmas pop songs. So like mid-century stuff, like Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra type stuff. And then there's also like newer Christmas songs. So my favorite old hymns would be I Wonder As I Wander and Oh Holy Night.
Nice.
My favorite classic pop song, hands down, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
That is a great one.
Always will love it. My favorite, I guess, newer, non-traditional kind of Christmas songs are either Forget December by Something Corporate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can we even call it new anymore? It's 20 years old. And Father Christmas by Bad Religion.
Okay. I don't think I know that one.
It's pretty good. They actually put out a whole album of Christmas songs, but that's not on there. It's on one of their other albums.
Oh. One of mine is Let It Snow. I was actually just singing that around to myself in my best crooner voice earlier.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. If I just watched Home Alone this week, I would have remembered it. The Christmas Vacation song is really fun. That was literally stuck in my head for a whole week after watching it last weekend. So,
okay. But yeah. So we had at work this week, there was a Christmas dress-up contest. The guy who won wore a lampshade around his waist and fishnets and heels, so he was the leg lamp. And then another guy dressed up as Cousin Eddie. I did not win. I wore my Tommy Wiseau Christmas shirt.
I can't imagine why that didn't win.
I don't know.
Now you're going to make me go listen to some of my random Christmas albums. I did have a Reliant K Christmas album that came with one of their other albums.
There's a Reliant K Christmas song on my Spotify Christmas playlist, but my wife put it on there. But I listen to my whole list. Ooh, I should publish my Christmas playlist too.
You should. Yeah, I had this ridiculous 80s hair metal Christmas album. I guess it was from the early 2000s, back when before like internet shopping was such a thing, and so I paid a ridiculous amount of FYE to get that album, and most of it's absolute garbage, but it was entertaining. Twisted Sister later did a fun hair metal Christmas album, which was much better. But I cannot remember. Oh yeah, dude, it was A Very Hairy Christmas, I think is what it was called.
Of course it was.
I was trying to pull it up, but I'm having trouble typing at the moment. Well, while I'm bringing this up, because I'm moving slow, what is your fourth comfort album?
So my fourth comfort album, I think it's one that you enjoy as well. And it goes back to kind of that same period of time where I was talking about the Sister Hazel concert. and kind of dealing with how life was changing. I was in college, and an album that came out around that time was actually suggested to me by Russell Sellers, is Diorama by Silverchair.
Oh my goodness, yes.
I wore that thing down. It was, you know, I didn't even rip it onto my computer because this was in 2002, and that was not the first thing that I did with albums. I would actually listen to them. But Across the Night had just the way that that album starts with Across the Night, just like it's this, almost like it's a musical. And I wasn't even into musicals back then, but it sounded to me like, oh, wow, I could be into musicals if they're like this. Without You is like this, just this powerful love ballad. Tuna in the Brine, I can't even describe it. It's just the power in the vocals and the power in the lyrics and the power in the melodies just all coming together and making this amazing song. And then some that are just like maybe a little toned down, but still just speak to you, like After All These Years, Love Your Life. Just great, great album, and it was definitely a source of comfort to me as well. Not really knowing, you know, still not knowing a lot of people, thinking, okay, well, these are my new friends, but I don't know them well yet because we've only known each other a few months as opposed to since we were kids, like with my friends from home.
Right.
Having this music to just kind of speak to me during that time.
Yeah, After All These Years is one that's probably their most beautiful song to me, or at least one of them. It's so melodic and just gorgeous.
Oh yeah, and the things that, like, the little vocal inflections that Daniel Johns puts in there, I've never had, like, that's whenever people used to tell me since high school that I was a good singer. But I never really was able to do that. And I was always like, I would think of myself as a good singer if I could do what Daniel Johns is doing.
Which is like right there. Such a ridiculous bar to set for anybody, because he is one of the most unique voices out there. But I definitely understand that could be a thing. Thankfully, I didn't set that high of a bar for myself.
Yeah. I basically set myself up to have imposter syndrome for the rest of my life with all these standards.
Right. Like, I think the only more difficult singer you could put out there would be like Freddie Mercury if you said, well, I'm not going to be good unless I can hit every note Freddie Mercury hit.
Yeah. Thing is, hitting notes is fine.
Well, that's true.
But it's moving without a consonant, just taking a vowel sound and trilling it around like you're a trumpet player hitting buttons. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you do that?
Didn't even think about that, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because he does that all throughout After All These Years.
Right. That album, I think I made it on my list a little while back. It is one of the most beautiful albums ever. I didn't appreciate it at the time because I was still in my hard rock phase where that's what I mainly focused on. But I remember you and Russell talking about it a lot, and maybe like 4 years later I started really getting into it.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was into Silverchair already. I really like a lot of the songs off Neon Ballroom. But, you know, I met Russell in that mass communications class that we were in, and he was talking about Silverchair, the new Silverchair Diorama, and I actually bought it on his recommendation without hearing anything from it. And listening to it and being like, this is phenomenal. And, like, taking it home and showing it to my brother and my dad, and they were like, wow, this is really good.
Yeah. I remember BJ played that, I think. Wasn't it BJ that played it on piano at one of the formals?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that was really cool. Do any of your other brothers like Silverchair?
I think all my brothers like Silverchair.
Oh, cool.
I think. I don't know if Nathan does or not. But to some extent, all my brothers like Silverchair.
Nice. Yeah, that album is a great comfort one because it's so beautiful, so many emotions in it. And then, of course, if it takes you back to that time, I imagine that can be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I finally found this Christmas album I was trying to remember. It was called We Wish You a Hairy Christmas.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever heard it?
I've heard of it.
It is god awful. Like, the only one I want to say that was actually pretty decent was Father Christmas by Warrant. The one that was so embarrassingly bad was Faster Pussycat covered Silent Night.
Oh,
and it's one of the most obnoxious covers ever. Because he's just like singing like low and gruff. So it doesn't even fit Silent Night at all. And I understand it's a reimagining, but no. man,
yeah, at some point you've got to let the song come out and not just try to make it whatever you are.
Right. Yeah, and I think I probably paid like $16 for it, which makes it even more painful.
Oh my God.
When you buy something like that, just thinking it's going to be so cool, and no, it wasn't. And it's funny, I'm not into hair metal a whole lot, but it just sounded like such a weird concept that I had to have it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you had a cheesy Christmas party or something, it's something you put on to go in the background.
Of course. Let's see, who's going to be my fourth? I'm going to go with the Beatles' White Album for my number four. And really, the Beatles could go for comfort albums for me. I absolutely adore the majority of their stuff. But the White Album actually got me through a scary event. I cannot remember what year it was. Probably 06 or so, maybe. Somewhere in there, I remember I had to have a procedure, and I was terrified. I don't like needles. I don't like having to be put under anesthesia. And so I was just super nervous for some reason that year. And I had my little iPod and couldn't hold a lot of music, but I had the White Album on there, and I remember listening to Obla-Di Obla-Da and a couple of other songs, and that just really comforted me as I was about to be wheeled back there and go under anesthesia. And I don't know, that was kind of the beginning of me realizing how entertaining and comforting that album could be. The White Album is one of the most bizarre things that ever existed. It has such a weird mixture of songs.
Yeah.
It's a double album, so you get ridiculous amounts of songs. I mean, a lot of the lyrics are definitely drug-inspired. They were experimenting with LSD and a lot of other drugs at the time, so some of it makes very little sense, but they're still beautifully crafted songs.
And Blackbird is one of my favorites.
Yes.
I'm not going to say my favorite Beatles song, but it's up there.
Nice. Yeah, it's gorgeous. I know it makes me so happy that during concerts, Alter Bridge, they actually play the Beatles' Blackbird and then go into their Blackbird. They're two very different songs, but still, just because that's such a emotional song for people and just such a beautiful Beatles song, they always do that as an intro. And so, just adds even more emotions to that song. But let's see. Wama Guitar Gently Weeps is one of the most gorgeous things George ever wrote. And if you really want to hear the emotion in that song, find the acoustic version. They did it. It was on Love, a compilation of Beatles songs back in, that would have been 06 as well.
Yeah.
That one's, to me, I like it a little better than the electric one that's on the actual album. Let's see. Happiness is a Warm Gun. It's just a fun, weird song. Across the Universe made me appreciate that song even more.
Oh, yeah. And see, I think Across the Universe, the movie, their version of Blackbird, when it's just like the whatever the instrument playing, probably the same thing as playing during Low Man's Lyric, but with Evan Rachel Wood singing Blackbird with nothing else except her, for just her voice and whatever that instrument is. Oh, God. Mm. Magic.
I need to revisit that movie. I haven't watched it in a lot of years. I remember
I think it's on Netflix.
Oh, cool. I have it on DVD, but it's more fun just to click on Netflix if it's there. Mm-hmm. But I remember, like, I got so into that movie within the first couple years after its release that I had both the soundtrack, but also I did the same track listing with the actual original songs by Beatles.
Yeah.
And that was fun to do, just kind of compare them. But Dear Prudence has such a really great bass line from Paul. And if you listen to it on good speakers, you'll appreciate it more. And it adds so much to the song. Let's see. The continued story of Bungalow Bill is such a fun song because it's so weird and different. Martha, My Dear is a pretty McCartney song. Rocky Raccoon, a lot of fun. Very bizarre, as a lot of the stuff is. And because they're like trying to bring in some like bluegrass influence to that and even kind of like affect a kind of southern accent at times. Yeah. At the very beginning of it. Have you ever heard, you've heard that one, haven't you?
Yeah, but it's been a while.
Okay. As he kind of begins it fast talking, out in the hills, there's a little boy, Rocky Raccoon. and just weird stuff like that. And it's funny to hear him say it in his Bible because he says it kind of in a weird way. But it's fun. It's a great one. And then the most beautiful love song ever written, Why Don't We Do It in the Road? I think every woman just wants to hear that from their man.
I still think that the most beautiful love song ever written is Baby Got Back, but we can agree to disagree.
This year, Paul had a song on his new album that basically was about sex, and it's so funny. People were just appalled that Paul would write a song like that. And it's like, do you realize he wrote Why Don't We Do It in the Road? I mean, I know it's creepier that he's in his 70s now singing about sex, but he is the same guy.
People in their 70s need love, too.
They do, yeah. And he's still got a hot wife, so. let's see. Your Blues is really good. That's a Lennon song. Oh, I can't believe I forgot this one when I was thinking. Everybody's Got Something to Hide, except for me and my monkey.
Mm-hmm.
Sexy Sadie. I love that one. Revolution number 9. It's fun just to hear them say number 9 and other random things for 8 minutes and 22 seconds, apparently.
Yes.
But anyway, I wanted to talk about this album anyway because they just did a reissue that I've only listened to the first disc of the extras, but they had a ton of the demos on them, called the Escher demos is the only part I've listened to. And it's all these songs just in their demo version. And so there's a lot of talking in between and then just them erupting into laughter sometimes if they mess it up or something. But it's,
I like stuff like that though.
Yeah. It's really cool to hear because it's the early versions of the song. You get to hear Lennon talking and sounding super happy too.
It's like the album equivalent of the intimate concert experience we were talking about earlier.
Right. Very good point. Yeah, it is. I need to, while I still have my Amazon Music Unlimited subscription, I need to check out the others because they do have the even more deep cuts that I'm not really sure what all is involved in that. But I really enjoy these outtakes or demos just as much as I do the actual album just because it's so cool to hear these early versions. And even on the Escher demos, it even has one of Paul's solo songs, Junk. And I think Child of Nature was Lennon's solo song. And, oh, Mean Mr. Mustard Seed and Polythene Pam, the early versions that wouldn't exist for another album. But even their early versions are on this. So
nice.
Really cool stuff. Like I said, if you have the Music Unlimited Amazon app, it's on there, or at least was last I checked. That'd be a good way
I
to...
I don't think I do. I had... See, it used to just be if you had Prime, you had all the Amazon Music, and they made Amazon Music Unlimited, like, a different thing that you have to have on top of Prime, so I don't
right.
think I do. There is some stuff you can still just on Prime, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on Prime, but they did a little... it was either a Black Friday or something right before that special that I am doing the Unlimited for a little while, but as soon as it goes back to regular price, I'll get rid of it, because... I mean, maybe Spotify that has like everything I wouldn't mind paying for.
Because I have Spotify Premium.
Yeah, and I like that concept a little better because it's absolutely everything, just about that you can get a hold of.
But there's some stuff that's still not on there.
Right, but I was just thinking like, otherwise I'd still just like to throw it towards the money towards the artist I want to support.
Absolutely.
But Spotify, you just some of everything. But yeah, the Amazon Prime app. The unlimited version. You might be able to get a free month of if you want to hear this. Or it might be on Spotify. I don't know. The special editions.
Because I got Tidal for free with my Sprint account.
Oh, cool.
But I haven't found anything on there that I can't find elsewhere.
Right. But yeah, this album, like I said, it comforted me during that procedure that time. And just, it makes me happy. It just, so much assortment and bizarreness. And like I said, that was just... one I love. So, any thoughts on the White Album besides?
Not that you haven't already said.
Okay.
I have not dived super deep into Beatle World to the level that I think that you have.
Right, but, right.
You know, not that that doesn't, yeah. Not that that means it, that I dislike them or anything like that. I just have not gotten as deep into them in my lifetime. It's mostly just the songs that everybody knows, with a few exceptions of some deeper cuts.
Right.
I do remember, wasn't there something called the Grey Album, where they remixed Jay-Z's Black Album with White Album songs?
I heard of that existing. I never listened to it.
My friend Ben was really into it. I just remember being like, well, why don't they also do it with Metallica's Black Album? I mean, that would be harder, but...
That would be cool. One of my favorites of those, you mentioned those mashup things like that, was an unofficial Q Unit, which was Queen and G Unit. Yeah, and 50 Cent solo show songs all mixed together. It was so much fun. It was ridiculous, but it was fun.
Yeah, but I mean, I like stuff like that too.
Oh, yeah. So, what is your fifth one that you want to talk about?
So, I have a little trouble narrowing this one down. I knew the artist, you know, kind of like with the Goo Goo Dolls earlier. I knew the artist, but I had not determined what album. But the artist is Cowboy Mouth.
Nice, okay.
And the album that I ended up landing on was Voodoo Shop, which, speaking of some things aren't on Spotify, this is actually what I was in my mind, because the rest of their albums are on Spotify. For some reason, Voodoo Shop is not. And if you don't know Cowboy Mouth, they've got a few things that, to me, are just make them stand out. One of them is their drummer is their singer. They do it live. Even live, their drums are in the front of the stage, and he's barefoot and wears shorts. But also, they have so much hard rock, but everything is positive. There's no anger. He's all about making people happy and making people, like, getting people to be in a good mood all the time. And if you've never seen them live, then you're missing out. I've seen them like four times. The last time I saw them was actually when we were in New Orleans for Nick's bachelor party. They were playing at Harrah's while we were there. I was like, well, whatever y'all are doing on this particular night, do what you're doing, but I'm going to see Cowboy Mouth in their hometown. But this one interesting thing about this album, though, is that I believe this was the first album that they wrote after Hurricane Katrina. So it ends, like, it's mostly their upbeat, happy music, but then it ends with a song called The Avenue, which is a slow song, and it's about Katrina and how he goes back to his hometown and how it's different because of this flood that came through. It's such a different way to end an album for them. But then it also, like, the rest, it opens with Joe Strummer, which is literally a song about how he had to dump his girlfriend because she didn't like the Clash. It has a song called This Much Fun, and it's a breakup song, and it's literally like, I'm so glad you dumped me. because now my life is great. It has the song, you know, the second to last song is called Glad to Be Alive. And it's the epitome of Cowboy Mouth's feel good rock. It's Are You Glad to Be Alive? Isn't that, like, because that's just something that Fred LeBlanc will say in concert all the time. Like, everyone get up and cheer if you're glad to be alive. If you have not seen them live and you get the chance, go. Even if you don't know any of their music. Some of my friends have never heard of them before and went to see them live, and now they go to every show that they can.
Nice.
When we talk about, and this is why I saved this one for number one, even though it's not really an album that I pull out a whole lot, when it really comes down to it, the epitome of comforting music is something that takes the energy that music puts into you and channels it in a positive direction. And that's what Cowboy Mouth is. That's really, I guess, all I have to say. Other than, you know, some of their other albums. Fearless was, I think, the album they did either after this or after that. And that has the song, I Believe. And that was what my wife and I had for our first dance. But then, you know, even back to the classic stuff, like Jenny Says, How Do You Tell Someone? So many great songs throughout their entire career, and they are still putting stuff out. And if you don't like Cowboy Mouth, then there's something wrong with you, and I don't want to be friends with you anymore.
Well, that was very eloquently said. I liked how you put the comforting music idea, just the whole concept behind it.
I don't really know if you have anything to add, because you probably don't know this album. I don't.
That was one of my biggest regrets, was not going to that show. I didn't make it, but I hope to someday see them.
Yeah. And, you know, we did play Jenny Says our senior year of college when you and I and Russell played Acoustic Night 2006.
Yes. Yep. That's still one of my favorite memories in college.
I miss so much about college.
Yeah. That was wonderful, and I know that concert was even more special for me for the fact that that was the first time we had worked out and did that song that was my lyrics, but your melody and everything else.
Yes.
Well, my fifth album is going to be very different than yours. And it's kind of different reasons why it made it, but it's just one of those that it makes me laugh, and that's why I picked it. Some of mine is less about that it's actual deep music or even sometimes feel-good music. It's just how this album hits me. And that is going to be... I'm still tied. I'll give you the band. It's Creed. But I'm trying to decide... I guess we're going to go with Weathered because it is so much fun to sing. There are some good songs on it, but there's also some ridiculous stuff on there. And I'm going to start with the ridiculous thing. One of my favorites to sing is Don't Stop Dancing.
I still remember, like, when I think you and Creed, I think about being at that karaoke bar in Huntsville and you getting up there and you kept doing the cross pose. And like, your Scott Stapp voice was so strong that, like, you stuck your lips out into duck face.
Yes.
To get the vocals the way that it does.
Well, that's a big part for me to do that voice, is I know I make that ridiculous face, but it's just part of it. And the funniest thing in that night was the fact that was my first time not doing a hit of Creed. Like, normally if I do karaoke, I either do My Sacrifice or Higher. But that night I decided to go with a deep cut, which is Don't Stop Dancing. It was not a hit, and the version they had was not even the album version. It was
like
an acoustic.
Yeah, it was like a live thing. Right?
Yeah. And so... like, I got off rhythm at the very beginning, and then, like, the crowd was just dead for, like, the first minute until they realized I was just making fun of it, basically. Yeah. And then that's when people started laughing and getting into it. But, yeah, that was a fun memory. And I think one of my first episodes I did that song on, just goofing around. But, yeah, it's just a fun, ridiculous song. I got to give it to Scott. He was trying for something positive. And I think he'd become a father probably had a couple kids by that point, but he was just trying something different. But it's ridiculous.
Yeah. His arms have been wide open a couple of times.
Yes. But I don't know why I don't know how that song made it on the album. I really don't, other than the fact that it was their last album and they were fighting like crazy. So it was probably just, let's just get this thing out. Well, there's that. Like, I already referenced My Sacrifice is on it. I actually kind of like Hide. One Last Breath. Bullets is a fun rockin' song.
I do not like One Last Breath.
So. Oh, I know. It's cheesy as can be, but I kind of like it. I know it's ridiculously cheesy. I don't know why I like it, but I do.
There's just something about it when I listen to it. I'm like, you couldn't come up with a second half of the chorus lyrics. You just sing the same thing twice.
Good point.
I don't know. When it comes to Creed, like, Creed has never been a huge favorite of mine, but I have always liked Are You Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I even remember back in high school, I was writing a sci-fi story, and I worked some, like, I worked something in there where the character was listening to that song so that I could work the lyrics into what was going on in the story.
Cool.
That's a thing that not many people know.
I forgot about Who's Got My Back. That's a good one that's on there. If you can get a version that doesn't have the first minute and a half of the actual song, because for some reason they did like a Native American chant at the beginning of the song.
Okay. I think it was actually Native Americans. Not cultural appropriation at all, is it?
Well, I don't think it was them doing it. I think they actually might have gotten actual Native Americans to add that part to the song. But it doesn't make sense at all, and it adds nothing to the song. But after you get past that, the song's actually good.
Okay.
So, it's a good rock song, but yeah. But then what I just have to reference, just because it's probably the only reference, like the only people that get it is me and Greg, but there's in the song Signs, he's just doing a whole listing off of things that the song's not about, and then he's like, this is not about sex, and then he just randomly does his own backup vocal, sex! It's the dumbest thing ever. And so we'll just randomly reference it sometime, and the whoever didn't reference it yells sex in that voice. It's, yeah. So, I don't know. It's just it's a ridiculous album in a lot of spots. I think Hyde is a beautiful song. And that's probably about it. But it's a fun album when you're just wanting to kind of get out of your own head and laugh. And
oh, yeah.
I know that was not their intent, but that's how it strikes me. So that's why it makes my list.
I don't know about you. I'm pretty postmodern when it comes to music, so it's what you get out of it. It's not what Scott Stapp wants.
Right. Well, I don't think I've ever cared what Scott Stapp wants.
No.
I definitely don't nowadays.
Wasn't there a radio program that did a... They had a contest, and they would read lyrics, and then you were supposed to guess if it was Creed lyrics or a 16-year-old girl's poetry?
Yes.
And they had Scott Stapp actually play it.
Yes, I think you might have shared it with me.
Probably.
I remember that.
I laughed a long time and then shared it with everyone that I knew who ever liked Creed.
I also loved his little teaser he did for the movie Creed back in 2015, where he's playing like he thinks it's a documentary about the band.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's one of those few times that, you know, he plays, you know, other than what you just referenced, where he just is in on the joke and has fun with it. So, but anyway, that's the fifth one. It's I know it was a big weird mixture of stuff, but
that's a good thing though.
Yeah. Sam, if anybody wants to reach out to you, how can they reach out to you?
I'm unreachable.
Oh, okay.
No. I'm on Twitter, Mr. Woodles. You can hear my new podcast all right here on Place to Be Nation Pop. It's called 90s to Nothing. Russell Sellers and I talk about movies. Really, that's about all. Like, I have a public Instagram that's also Mr. Woodles, but it's food pictures and pictures of my pets. And if you try to add me on Facebook and I don't know you, then I won't accept friend requests, so just don't even think about that one.
See, I'm a weirdo. Unless you just seem creepy, I will accept people on Facebook most of the time. But it's probably best to send me a message first so I actually know why you're trying to add me. But I'm Sunday Groove PTB on Twitter. Please reach out on there if you have any thoughts on this show. If you want to share your comfort albums, I'd love to hear it. I'd like to get back to actually sharing feedback. I haven't done that in a while, but I do always appreciate it. And do you plan to bring that back to the show? Definitely check out a lot of stuff on Place to Be Nation. Pop. We have Russell's other shows. He's part of the Sarcastic Four and the Marvel Age podcast. He's also got DC Post-Crisis Management. Easy for me to say. Am I forgetting anything else? I guess those are it's just three shows. It felt like more for some reason.
He used to have Sellers Point.
Right, that's where I'm getting confused, yeah. And of course, Hard Drive and Fanboys, Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, so many great ones out there to listen to. I'll be back next month. I don't know what my topic will be yet, but just stick around and I'll definitely be back next month. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to say. No, that's. I think that's it. Well, thanks for listening, and I will catch y'all down the road.
I love all of you, except for you.
Bye.
This man, 'cause no man is my fingers seek my vein.